Energy to order. It's 10:20 on Tuesday, March 6th. I think that's the correct date. We have present Representative Klayman, Representative Johnson, Representative Lincoln, Representative Rauscher, myself, Chair Wohl. We have a quorum to conduct business. Today we have a one presenter, John Burns, Vice President, Golden Valley Electric Association, to give an overview on Golden Valley energy in the interior, the rail belt, and any other questions that might come up that are pertinent and relevant to this committee. And I see we have Representative Johnson walking in as well. So without any further ado, John, if you come up and introduce yourselves and give your presentation, and we can take questions anytime during the meeting. I also want to say that this, to those legislators not from the interior, which is everybody except for me, although George has some interior representation. Although we're dealing with Golden Valley, this is not just about Golden Valley in the interior, but the rail belt in general and how these issues pertain to everybody, including things like MLNP and all that stuff. So, John, I'll let you start.
Thank you very much. First of all, it's a very much a pleasure to have the opportunity to appear before you this morning. You should have received three handouts. One was a 10-page handout, I think, that was handed to you or emailed to you. And then most recently, there are two maps. One is a color-coded map, and the other is it's on plain white paper. Reflects the this is what we call the rail belt system, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. And then there's a third handout that's in front of you, which is a recent article that appeared relating to a decision from the RCA involving the Delta Wind Farm. So with that, I'd like to begin the presentation, and if there are any questions, please don't hesitate to ask. You know, I can either entertain the questions as we go along or at the end. So as the first slide indicates, I'm GBA Vice President and General Counsel. I serve as in both roles, formerly private practice for about 30 years and a short stint with the state of Alaska. So it's been a very enjoyable process.
Those that don't know, John Burns was the Attorney General for a short period of time.
So, and it was under the Parnell administration. And my guardian angel is Rob here. So we'll
down.
Yep. So the presentation is broken into three parts. The first part is about Golden Valley, who Golden Valley is, who we are, what we represent today. The second component of it is Golden Valley tomorrow. And then third is on a much more of a macro perspective, in reality, that we, as those handouts reflect. Golden Valley, and no utility, is an island unto itself anymore. We are very much interconnected, and it's important that we take a holistic perspective on issues as we approach them that have, you know, more that resonate not simply within our respective geographic areas. So Golden Valley at glance, this slide is pretty self-evident, approximately 35,000 members. We serve 100,000 residents. The size component of this, almost 6,000 square miles. When you think about that, that's a huge geographic area, particularly when you compare Golden Valley to utilities in the lower 48. We have a little over 3,200 miles of power lines, and as you can see on the on this one diagram, we serve from Cantwell all the way to Delta. It's a horseshoe approach. Our retail sales last year, 2017, was 1.24 billion kilowatts. That represents in real dollars about $141 million of power purchases. That's what it costs in power purchases to generate that. That's a staggering amount of money.
John, can you repeat that number again?
It's $141 million in fuel and purchase power to generate those sales of $1.24 billion. And Golden Valley, I mean, what's important, you're going to see Golden Valley through these slides, what Golden Valley is and represents. But Golden Valley is not unique to other utilities. All the other utilities that we'll be talking about, there are certain unique aspects of it. But, you know, we all operate, you know, very similarly. We are all very cost conscious. We have responsibilities to serve our members. We have, you know, fiduciary obligations. So we all operate similarly. But, of course, we have different loads and generation mixes and that sort of thing. And finally, you can see our generation capacity is 381 megawatts of generation capacity. That's what we call our ability to generate. And you'll see shortly the mix in which we use to generate. And that mix translates, all of this translates into real hard dollars because the nature of the generation dictates cost. If I'm doing this properly, there's a slide representative of where our power comes from. You can see 2016, 2017. They're essentially the same. You know, and things don't change by large percentages. But focusing on the pie chart on the right, the 2017 pie chart, starting with the blue, you can see our five different mixes. The hydro is 5%, and that hydro is Bradley Lake. Right, we don't have the benefit of any other hydro connection, and that's power that comes up through the intertie. So that's hydro. Coal is one of our cheapest source, okay, of generation. And the next is natural gas. And when we talk about natural gas, we don't have natural gas in yet. You know, the future is optimistic. You guys probably know better than we, you know, what the future holds relative to that. But this natural gas is what we call economy energy. And that's energy that comes up the intertie that we purchase from MLNP, MEA, and CEA, and a little bit from Homer. But you can see that's a very large component of of where our power comes from. Next is oil, which is, unfortunately, that's been our dominant generating source. And finally, we have wind, and that's a combination of Alaska, of our own Eva Creek and Alaska Environmental Power. So those make up the five constituent components of where Golden Valley's power comes from. Now we'll go... Yeah,
I have a question, Jack. if and when Healy 2 comes online, which is another coal power plant in Healy, what do you anticipate your coal percentage to be?
I'm not sure how it's going to affect the pie chart, but it'll certainly increase it in where it will likely offset will be on the oil. Oh. The oil and the natural gas, because the coal is by far the cheapest source of our generation. So here's GBA.
A question.
I'm sorry. Yes.
Representative Rusher.
Follow up on that and to the consumer.
I'm sorry?
You explained how that may affect the other items on the chart, but how will that affect the consumer?
As we will talk a little later here, it is our cheapest source. It'll have a direct impact on COPA, or cost of power adjustment, and it's significant. And I've kind of laid out these slides. You'll see what the cost of power is, and I'll explain it very shortly in this slide as far as the differential in the cost of generation. It's huge. In fact, let's deal with that now. Here's when we talk about GVA generation. This is how GVA itself generates its own power, some of its own power. So let's start on this one, starting on the left side, the Healy Unit 1 and 2. Healy Unit 1 has been in operation, I think it's close to 50 years. It is our lowest cost power, about 5.5 cents. Is what it generates. Healy 2, we are optimistic. We've had some, as I think all of you are aware, we've had some issues with recommission. We're optimistic to be up and going now with first fire on coal in June of this year and having it in our baseline on in September. And that's going to be a huge positive. Again, that will end up being our lowest cost power at about 6 cents. And then Fairbanks, at the very top right, we've got the Fairbanks, we call it Fairbanks plant. It's in Fairbanks, 41 megawatts capacity, generation capacity. It's all oil, fires on oil. We call this the Zender plant. We use it only for peaking. When we are close to maxing out, and we use it as peaking. And the reason is it's 12 to 14 cents to generate. So you can see the huge differential there. The one below it, North Pole Expansion Plant, this is a unique plant in that it's a combination of steam. We've got a gas turbine and steam component of it. So the steam component of it is essentially free. It's 12 megawatts on the back end of it comes as a result of the turbine, the exhaust, the heat exhaust from the principal. And so we use this one as a base load, understandably, and it's important to use it at that level because we get on the back end of it, we get the cheaper energy. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, Representative Johnson.
Thank you, sir.
I can't always see you guys laterally, so.
Thank you. So, the generation, are they combined diesel gas, or you've just got a diesel and a gas there?
We run it on diesel. It's convertible to
it's
gas.
Convertible.
Yeah. Hopeful, fingers crossed, that when gas gets to Anchorage, that we'll be able to convert.
And how many generators are in that building?
There's two. There's two two turbines.
And turbines.
You've got the gas turbine, and that then generates the exhaust from that.
Right.
Heats. We convert that to the steam.
So one diesel gas turbine and
one steam. Yep.
Okay. Thank you.
And then below that is the Delta. This is what we call the John Brown. That's located in Delta, and that's just an emergency. It's just an emergency backup. We try not to use it unless it is an emergency, because that's 20 cents megawatt to run that. So that's the most expensive. Then you've got the North Pole, which is 120 megawatts. Again, that's oil, because remember, at the time that these were built, that was what we had available to us. And this one we use for peak, for backup, and when other systems are down, because you're always rotating the system in a maintenance mode. And then we have in the center picture of that is Eva Creek. Our wind farm. It's been up and operational for about 5 years now. It's been a tremendous success. It's running about a 35% efficiency. It provides us about eight megawatt base load. So it's been wonderful. So that's Golden Valley's generation. What we generate. Yes.
I have a couple questions. What's the cost of your two North Pole plants per megawatt? You didn't.
I think that's. I'm not sure on the cost of that. I can find that out. I didn't have it down here. But it's. I think that's our. As far as the Healy is cheapest. Eva Creek is when if you consider the cost of the power, which is essentially zero. It's the cheapest, but you've got the capital costs and that associated with it. And I'm not sure, Mr. Chair, the cost. I can get that for you.
Okay. Yeah. Representative Johnson.
Kind of an outlandish question, but with Eva Creek and the problem with it is storage. Is there any? Do you ever use your battery storage in Fairbanks to retain the power from Eva Creek?
We don't. But
is that possible?
We are not as I understand it, not the way it's currently configured. Okay, but the technologies with batteries, the battery technology that we are seeing now is vastly improved. So Golden Valley is evaluating. You'll see one of the other slides. As far as the future, we are looking at ways to upgrade battery and actually put on some different battery configurations. And that's certainly an issue as you continue to evaluate renewables. I'm sorry.
I have a question.
Sure.
Along the same lines. So Eva Creek, you're having wind, and of course, as many of us know, if you're using wind power, which fluctuates, you need a sort of backup, what they call spinning reserve, to offset the fluctuations of wind. So if Eva Creek is as successful as you mentioned, providing wind energy, and you have a spending reserve to back it up. Wouldn't that work in conjunction with another wind source, say Delta Power, which also needs that same spending reserve? Since they're both on there, would the what do you call it, avoided cost of Delta Power, which is said to be very high, and that has to do with this RCA case, wouldn't that also be the same avoided cost with Eva Creek? And if you're using a spending reserve for Eva Creek, couldn't you then share that with Delta Power?
You know, that's a great question. And what it underscores is the fact that there's the components of renewables. You've got integration cost and regulation cost. When Eva Creek was built, it was sized appropriately to absorb the spinning reserve that we regularly run. So it was sized at the optimum size of it, so that we could absorb that with no impact with our system. And that's why, even though we have some additional pads there, we did not use all of those pads. And so as you put more and more wind generation or renewables on it, you have to make sure that there is sufficient reserve on the spinning reserve in order to capture that regulation. And that means that where you aren't optimized, you have to bring on additional spinning reserve. And the way our system is configured, and we spent the sizable amount, the chair mentioned a case that we recently had to deal with, we call it Delta Wind Farm DWF, and it was all about that. It was about the cost of regulating additional renewables. And, you know, if anyone tells you that that utilities are opposed to renewables, I can tell you from Golden Valley's perspective that that's flat wrong for this reason. You know, a utility has an obligation to bring on, you know, reasonably priced power. And so we're always looking, intuitively and logically, you're always looking to ensure that you can bring on whatever power source there is in order to reduce your cost. So if there are those sorts of powers that are available, energy is available, utilities would be bringing it on, and certainly Golden Valley.
Chair, I would like to suggest that is why I continue to ask about storage.
Yes.
Because your spinning reserve.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Representative Johnson, and I think that will be something that will be recurring for future discussions. And my understanding of the battery at Golden Valley is it's used if there's a power outage to quickly supply a lot of power, so people don't experience an outage until something else can get started. So it's a very short blast of power, not a fluctuating reserve. Representative Johnson, do you have a question?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have a question, and I'm going to apologize if it's on in your presentation further ahead. What is your base demand? Generally, I mean, I imagine it fluctuates.
Our peak load is 210. 210 is our peak load. And obviously that's I forget the protocol. I'm sorry.
It's
through the chair.
Our base.
We're kind of informal here. So.
And that's the usually in the coldest part of winter.
What was it?
210.
And okay.
And I do have a slide that will talk about that, because, you know, we have the ability, as the earlier slide showed, about 281 is our generation capacity. That's what we can generate. We don't want to use it, though, because of the price, the cost of some of those units. You know, like I talked about the John Brown, the one in Delta, 20 cents. You know, that's an emergency, because as you'll see where we get our power, we try to, and there's a great video, it shows about how we are constantly trying to optimize the mix, the generation mix, to the cost.
Representative Johnson.
Follow up. Thank
yep.
you, Mr. Chair. But you have, with your coal-fired plant, I mean, renewables are not a problem as far as having your base load covered. I mean, you have that covered all the time with coal, right?
No, then that's
do
the
not.
Other thing.
Okay.
And here's the other thing, is you can't use coal to regulate wind. You need something that's very responsive. And that's the difficulty, is trying to find that, you know, how to optimally configure a system with the generation sources that are there, because the bottom line is our responsibility is to keep the electricity, the lights on, at the lowest cost that we can optimally do it.
Representative Clement.
Just a, for my own clarification, when you talk about your peak load, the 220, that's actually essentially when all plants are running at full power. Full generation capacity?
No, load is different than generation. I'm sorry, through the chair. Load is different than generation. The load is the demand. You know,
right.
How many consumers are drawing on the electricity?
Who wants power?
And that's right. Who wants it? The generation is how our ability to produce. And so you've got that different different components. That on the next slide. You have
one quick question. Which one of these plants is the naphtha plant?
The naphtha is our North Pole plant.
There's two.
Yeah, but I'm sorry, the bottom left.
One?
The bottom left.
Okay, the 120 megawatt one. Okay, mm-hmm. Got it.
So the next source of our power, where we get power, is from independent power producers, and we have. Three of our largest, Delta Wind is the Alaska Environmental Power. The middle one is Bradley Lake Hydro. And technically, that's not an independent power producer. It's owned by AEA, but it's independent to us. It's different. You know, we put it on from, it's a different source. Bless you. It's where we get it. The next is Aurora Energy. And some of you, in fact, there was a comment as we were getting set up. A gentleman asked me, where is FMUS still in the picture? And that's essentially what Aurora was. That was formerly Phoenix Municipal Utility System. And it is probably our third cheapest source of energy. That's coal-fired. And so... we bring on, you know, as this slide says, IPPs can connect to GVS system either through the RC and tariff guidelines. We have small utilities like AEP, the Delta Wind. It's a very simplified, very streamlined process. Larger facilities, we have to make sure that we have interconnection in regulation issues. Third source is renewables, GVA is very strong about renewables. In fact, I think Golden Valley's has the ability to generate, I think it's up to 20% of our requirements with renewables. We have a very aggressive SNAP program, which, if I can remember, it stands for Sustainable Natural Alternative Power. And this is a very popular program. It's grown significantly. We've got 199 producers. You can see 96 solar. And you see the arrays on businesses and homes. And this is effectively what we call net metering. You know, excess is sold back to utility. And I'm assuming that most all utilities have something similar to this. The next renewable source is our own wind farm. We've got 12 turbines up there. It's almost 25 megawatt capacity. As I said, I think we had anticipated that it would be 30% efficiency. It's running about 35% efficiency over the 5 years. It's been wonderful. But again, it was optimized as far as the size for the system. The bottom of this slide reflects Golden Valley's commitment, and every utility has a similar commitment. Maybe the numbers are different, but every utility has a renewable pledge, you know, because you can't afford not to. We have to be stewards of our environment as well. Golden Valley, we had an initial pledge of our goal was 10% of system peak load. We quickly met that in 2007, and we increased it 20%. We've met that. We've met that in 2014, and the board is at this juncture evaluating what ought to be the next goal. And that's part of strategic planning, because that, you know, all of that has to be looked at in the context of long-term needs.
Is this 20%, is that of you have the capacity of making 20% of your peak load, or at any time, or at peak demand? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Or, so does that mean you have the capacity to do it, or at any time 20% of your peak demand is produced?
No, the capacity, meaning that if Eva Creek is running full, you know, you can't, with renewables, you can't just, but if we are maximizing all the renewables that we have available to us, that's it's up to 20% of our peak.
And that does not include Bradley Lake?
That does include Bradley.
Yep. With Bradley Lake, that you were 5 or 6% yeah. or something like that. I can't remember. Maybe it's more than that.
This is Golden Valley's newest project.
Okay.
This is will be the largest solar array in Alaska. It's going to be on a 3-acre. It's a 3-acre footprint. It's on Van Horn. You'll be seeing it off of Van Horn Road. The panels have been ordered. We're waiting for spring to start the process, and we're hopeful to have this up and in our system, integrated into our system in October of 2018. I'm sorry?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. I was looking at the picture.
It's hard for information here.
Representative Johnson.
Chair's very interested in 8x10 glossies. Anyways, so this is interesting because it's a seasonal, your peak is seasonal. Are you tying that to any industrial use, or
we consider this somewhat of an experimental process. Solar, and people get upset when we talk about, you know, this demonstration or experimental, because solar works.
Right.
How it works in a system, in for example, in our system, when it's integrated into our system, remains to be seen, and it's not tied to any particular industrial use. We're just trying to see how it will affect, be integrated into our system. And independents have expressed the potential for, you know, other arrays built elsewhere, not through necessarily Golden Valley. You know, there's Lower 48, there are a number of different types of solar projects. They're community-owned, member-owned, these sorts of things. So we'll see. We're optimistic this gets up. You can see it's fairly small. It's a, you know, half a megawatt.
Right.
And so it's a small, which is amazing to see how large this is, 3 acres in the generation of it. But it's, it reflects the, Golden Valley's commitment to renewables. And, I think there are other utilities that are, and I'm not sure, I may be misspeaking, but I think CEA is looking at putting solar onto their system. I know that some of the other utilities were talking about it, but we're proud of it. We'll see. Time will tell, but we're hopeful to get it in October. Unfortunately, for Fairbanks, the optimum time is in the spring. You got the reflection, great light at the angle of the sun. You got the reflection off the snow, and so we'll see.
And through the chair, do these have automated directional?
I'm sorry, through the chair. I believe they're stationary. I'm not sure that they're cantilevered.
I imagine in the winter they'll be brushed off. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like I said, it's going to be an experiment. We'll see how it handles it.
Well, recently in the news, there's a power plant in Colorado that was built using wind, solar, and with batteries that produces power cheaper than coal, they say. So, I mean, that's a different part of the country, I realize, but a lot of progress being made. Representative Rusher had a question.
Yeah, thank you, through the chair. This half a megawatt, that's at your best?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. And, when you put that in terms of what it will supply, I don't quote me these numbers, but I think it's 50 residences. It'll generate sufficient power on a year-round basis to serve 50 residences. It's a small number. So,
are you going to get a rebate through somewhere th- for utilizing this somehow?
No. It just becomes, it's Golden Valley owned. It's going to be put into our system. But if you see here, we did get a grant. Mm-hmm. We got almost a $250,000 grant for this project.
There you go. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Representative Johnson.
Isn't 1 megawatt 1,000 homes? So 500 would be.
No, the I'm sorry. The numbers that were that I was told, I'll confirm it. I'll get it to the chair, but confirm the numbers. I think it comes in at about, I think it's 54 residences. So I don't, okay. But I'll confirm it for through the chair and get to the information.
Okay.
Because there's a nice fact sheet on it that I think Golden Valley's generated. The next slide shows our power purchases. And remember in the pie chart, sounds like a lot of people have been catching the bug.
Yep.
I know it's been a fair night. But anyway, this shows the
chain reaction.
It's like yawning. One person does it.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, really. I'll speed this up quickly. Run you that directly those clocks
here. Back in the room here.
Yeah.
I assume
you're next, George.
Yeah. So the next slide shows our power purchases. The first is from Aurora Energy, 25 megawatts. This is coal. This is, as I noted earlier, independent power producer. And the bottom left picture is Chugach's plant here in Anchorage. We purchase 60 megawatts that comes up the intertie, and we purchase it from either CEA, MNP, or NEA, and that's our natural gas. Remember that pie chart showed that the yellow was the natural gas component of it. This is very important to us, as we'll show you that in one of the later slides, because the cost of power that comes up the intertie is we're critically dependent on that as far as cheaper cost energy. And this is why, because this slide is very representative of the cost. So for all the other rail belt utilities as well. And this is effective very, very recent March 3, 2018. And you can see where Golden Valley sits in this at 22.8 versus MNP at 17.3. And that's the difference between natural gas and oil. And so when we purchase on the previous slide here, when we are purchasing economy energy, we call it economy energy. It's natural gas. We call it economy energy because we're able to purchase it and offset the higher cost of fuel oil. So it's very important to us that source remains available to us. And as many of you are well aware, the MNP sale is going to before the voters, I believe, in April. And Golden Valley was one of several who put in letters of interest, and which is not very different, as all of you can appreciate, very different than an offer, the letter of interest, because we are critically interested to understand and to monitor this sale, because as you can see in the on the diagrams that I presented earlier, ours is like at the end of an extension cord, and it's very important to us that we have that source of energy available.
John, a couple, two questions. Homer Electric is just slightly cheaper than Golden Valley, and they burn natural gas. Is that my understanding?
Yep.
So their fuel doesn't save them.
I don't know.
They're paying for a new power plant.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's capitalization.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what it was, because they just put in some additional facilities, and I think that captures the total all in cost, which is the cost of power plus the capitalization. I think.
Does do you or anyone on the committee or where Juno would come in on this as being a hydro? Anyone know what Juno's?
11 cents.
11 cents. It says Duff Mitchell in the audience. Okay.
And one last observation is that rural Alaska, from my last checking, when PCE kicks in and you use less than 500 kilowatts, I think it's around 25 cents. So it's between Fairbanks and Valdez prices, is my understanding. So.
No, it's incredible what, you know, and you've hit on it, and hopefully these slides are, you know, they illustrate very clearly that the cost of generation correlates to, or the nature of generation, you know, the generation mix correlates to prices, because, you know, Bradley Power, which is hydro, is Golden Valley's second cheapest source of power. And you just heard, I think, what the price of residential for Juneau, which is predominantly hydro. A huge difference.
And I guess the follow-up to that would be if Bradley Lake was able to distribute power to Fairbanks at a set rate instead of, I mean, do you know what the transport cost is from power from Bradley to Fairbanks per?
Yeah, the transmission cost or the wheeling cost, which we call it, I'm not sure. What it is, but we, you know, Golden Valley, I believe, owns about roughly 18% of Bradley, and all the, you know, all of the other utilities own different components of it, and that's another, you know, reason that, you know, Golden Valley is critically concerned to ensure that, you know, in this MLMP sale, that the Bradley Lake issue is also addressed, because Bradley Lake has a tremendous potential for regulating. Renewables. And so that's a thing we should all be aware of.
And for the chair, one of the issues with Bradley Lake is there's a lot of power production there, but the transmission and with MLMP's ownership, it really didn't fit into their. I mean, I think MLMP at any time would have sold Bradley Lake because it didn't fit into their business plan. But maybe being part of Chugach, it does fit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's as I noted, it's important. I mean, to monitor that sale, you know, Chugach is a, you know, wonderful utility, and you know, I think it makes sense certainly for Chugach to be evaluating it. But we want to, all the other Railbelt utilities, I think, are interested in monitoring and understanding the impact, because it's as those diagrams reflect, and as we'll get later on. You know, utilities have to take a holistic perspective. We can no longer operate as an island. We no longer are islands. At one time, I think we were. But the intertie has made it, certainly from Fairbanks' perspective, the intertie has been, you know, a very positive thing. Because if many of you, and I, you know, I don't know how long the chair has lived in Fairbanks, but I've lived there for a lot of years. And I remember when we went out of power, you know, it was some desperate times because we didn't have an alternative source.
I guess
now it's only about an hour or so.
there was a time when GVA made it a special in Fairbanks. If you electrified the house, they'd help finance it. We happened to have one of those homes at one point.
This is, you know, this is a very interesting video, and I'd like to share it with you, because it's all about how do you optimize the generation mix in real time in order to save money. Because this is, we talk about it in theory, but seeing it in reality, and we all do it. I mean, we are all looking, when you drive down the road, you're looking at, you know, for the cheapest source of fuel for your automobile. It's no different. So I'd like to take a few minutes and play this video for you.
Go ahead, admit it. When it's time to fill up your car or truck, you go to the station with the lowest price, even if you have to go out of your way to get there. At GVEA, we do the same thing when we produce and purchase power. We go out of our way to find the lowest cost power and the cheapest fuel for our power plants. We always buy or produce the least expensive power we can get, and that means savings on your electric bill.
My name is Henry Dale. I'm the power systems manager here at Golden Valley Electric. My job is to figure out which units we need to run to make the most economical power for our members.
GVEA has 9 different power sources it can draw from. The dispatchers take as much power as they can get from the least expensive sources.
On a typical day like today, we're trying to get as much economy energy as we can out of Anchorage. We can get a good price on the natural gas down there.
Hey, it's Jeremiah. We're looking for some more power. You got any available?
Our most inexpensive power is our coal plants, and we run those flat out all the time. Then to balance things out, we use our Bradley Lake, which is only so much water for the year, so we use the right amount of water for the day, and then the rest is full up ours. We, of course, run our most inexpensive units first, and then our more expensive ones afterwards.
But Golden Valley doesn't have enough cheap power available, so it has to burn oil, and that's expensive.
You can see that we're running a little under, just under $10,000 an hour in our fuel costs and generation.
When you're spending that kind of money on fuel, it's important to make every bit count. GVEA has sophisticated software that calculates the optimum fuel mix for reliability and lowest cost.
We do the economic calculations. We have a program that runs every minute automatically, looks at the system, looks at what units I have online, and calculates what the best mixture of those units are. Our automatic generation control system was making control corrections every 4 seconds to ensure that we're getting the cheapest possible mix for our customers.
Every 4 seconds, Golden Valley adjusts its fuel mix to minimize the use of oil and maximize the use of cheaper fuels.
Compared to oil-fired, our coal is cheap, our wind is cheap. Gas-fired energy out of Anchorage is cheap, relatively speaking. But oil-fired, as anybody who gets fuel at the pump knows, it's just gotten outrageous these last several years.
This is just one way that GVEA is working hard to kick the oil habit, and that means real savings for our members.
Through our calculations and our minute-by-minute scheduling, we can save $1,000 a day in a cold winter type day. It's not simply just turn on the generators and go home. We're at it hour by hour, minute by minute. I've got people dedicated to finding cheaper power every day.
And that's what it's all about, is, it's about optimizing the generation in order to minimize costs. And, again, Golden Valley is no different. CEA, NEA, the other utilities are doing the exact same thing. And we need to. But you can see this is done on a real-time basis because, every penny counts. Because in the bottom line is that, the members have to pay for it.
But is it fair to say that the Anchorage utilities aren't necessarily calling you guys for cheap power, correct?
That's true. We'll see. When Healy comes online, and there's lots of exciting things that are happening on the rail belt, and there may be a time that one of our generating units is part of the power pooling agreement that comes to be.
So, Mr. Johnson.
Yes, I saw that you have the F-35s there, as far as Allison, and I know that DOD has. I can't remember the ratio right now, but their efforts to go to renewable, is that going to be affecting how you, your power structure?
I don't know that it'll affect the power structure, not that we know of today. I mean, we are working with them on a regular basis, the Department of Defense on a regular basis, as we look to see how we can increase renewables on next so that they can use it, get the benefit of it as well.
And do you know, as they build out, what the demand will be, the increased demand from?
I don't know as far as residences are concerned. I mean, you know, it's that trickle down effect. You know, as the population increases, service demands increase, businesses multiply, and that sort of thing. So I don't know that there's been a real analysis done on what the long term economic impact will be to Fairbanks, let alone from Golden Valley's load increase. But, you know, if it comes to be, and I think the chair probably has a good sense of it as anybody, if that comes to be, that'll be a huge positive. And so the slides that we previously looked at is really Golden Valley today. Now we're transitioning for the next few slides, you know, Golden Valley tomorrow. And as you can see from our perspective, you know, the future looks very bright. There's a recently new load in Clear Air Force Station, and that was a conversion. They converted from self-generation to taking the demand through Golden Valley. We've got the F-35 squadron that hopefully will come to be. They're doing some extensive building. You never know what the federal government will do, whether they, you know, reverse course, but it looks very promising. We're looking, well, you saw the solar. As additional renewable energy sources, we're always evaluating how to bring on creatively, looking for opportunities to bring on more renewable. And the bottom is the 7.2 million capital credit refunds, the checks that just, you know, went out not long ago, which was a huge positive. So these are the things that where Golden Valley is. We just completed our rate case. We hadn't done a rate case since 2008. Other utilities have had to do them on a more frequent basis. We just submitted one last year. It has been approved. When we submitted it, the reason we had submitted it is to get our rate structure more in line with the cost causer, cost payer. It hadn't been done in 2008. Things have changed. And so we filed it. It's been approved. When we filed it, we sought to get a $3 million reduction in our revenue requirements, our operating revenue requirements. And the RCA has approved it, but they've approved it contingent upon Healy 2 coming into our base load. Because our forecasting was all based on Healy 2 coming into our base load, and so the RCA approved it contingent upon the base Healy 2.
This often comes up, but when Healy 2 comes online, conceivably you'll be spending less on power production because you'll be burning more coal, which is your cheapest source. But to pay for the capitalization of the power plant, which has been consuming money for a while and hasn't really put out any power, how does that affect the rates? And you know, I hear different answers. So, well, it'll stay neutral, it'll go up, it'll go down.
Well, there'll be a slight impact, but remember, these are spread. The cost of it is spread over, I think it's a 30-year term. So there will be some impact, but overall, the reduction in the cost of generation more than offsets the cost associated with the capital. So there will be a significant decrease in the cost of on the overall consumer bill.
So when you say impact, that sounds like it'll go up due to the capitalization, but it'll go down due
because
to the energy savings.
That's right.
So the goal is a net reduction.
A net reduction. That's exactly right. The next slide here is a meter replacement project. Many of you are already familiar with AMI's advanced metering infrastructure. I think some of the other utilities on the road out have put these on. They're new to us. It's not new technology. But the beauty of AMI is that it allows the consumer tremendous access to data. You know, you can know what your consumption is in real time. You can, figure out your costs, all of these things. So, again, as I said, not new technology, but it will certainly improve our system reliability. There used to be a time when, when our electricity went out in Fairbanks, the linemen would say, leave your porch light on so we know when it comes back on. And so with a combination of the outage management system that we put on last year in AMIs, we'll be able to deploy. We'll know where outages, we'll be able to pinpoint where outages are and respond on a much faster basis.
Oh, Representative Johnson.
So, I, at the request of a constituent, I did a little research on smart meters. Is that what this is?
Yes.
Same thing? Yep. And they're very, very controversial.
Yeah. In some places, they are, they can be controversial, and it depends on how people perceive them, because they collect a lot of data. And so you can, which is optimum from a utility perspective, because you have load demand, you can figure out where your peak loads are, your time of day use, and you can really change your rate structure so that you can offer different pricing at different times. And so it's the concern of big government, you know, somebody looking over your shoulder and knowing what's going on. And I can tell you that certainly that from the utilities perspective and the utilities that I'm aware of and certainly from Golden Valley's perspective, that's not our intent. Our intent on this is to make doggone sure that we're better serving our customers. So.
I have a follow-up if you don't, but go ahead.
Well, that wasn't entirely the gist of everything that I had found, but I would have a moment. Maybe I can talk to you about it.
No, absolutely. I'll stay as long as you need me.
Along that line, so currently your rate at 20, whatever it was, 22 cents, 22.8 or something like that.
22.8, that's exactly right.
That's across the board 24/7. When I use power, that's what I get billed. That's the current system.
Yes.
And what you're saying is a more advanced system might be charging me a different rate at 7 a.m. as opposed to noon, kind of like a hotel in Vegas that has a different rate on a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, depending on demand, correct?
Exactly.
And so this isn't in place. A lot of other utilities are using it, and then a consumer will know somehow when their cheapest power is, and so they won't do a load of laundry till it's 2 a.m.
That's exactly right. Very, very sophisticated utilities have even have, you know, notices that go out that say, okay, you know, now is this the cheapest time, and so people are doing their laundry or whatever, you know, hour it might be. And because when you look at load, load curves, they're, you know, think about it, when everybody's getting up, getting ready for work, big demand, then it goes down when everybody's at work, you know, and you've got these cycles, then people come back, and then when people are sleeping, it's really at those troughs. And so if you can figure out how to maximize those opportunities, then you can, and it's better for a utility too, because they're having to have generation. And so if you can figure out where those optimum, that load, we call it load balancing process. So there's, you know, technology, there's positives and negatives to it.
Well,
I'll go ahead.
Well, we talked about on-bill financing in our last meeting and different devices that you may want to purchase that the utilities may finance if they choose to. And the topic of batteries came up as a standalone item, and at first it's like, well, that would go with a solar panel or something like that, but based on what you're saying here, if an individual wanted to buy a storage battery for their house that could run certain things during peak hours, they could charge it during non-peak hours and then run other, you know, they could buy electricity when it's cheapest and then use it when it's more expensive, I guess, would be a potential.
Well, you missed the first slide. I presented myself as a lawyer. So it's a little bit out of my depth.
Well, you'll learn.
Yeah.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So would there be a potential for an opt-out on the meters if someone wanted to not have the meter?
Absolutely.
Okay.
That's it. That's as we are deploying. That's precisely it. So, you know, people call in and they have questions, and all their questions, we seek to answer all of the questions, but in the end, some people are just not going to want to do it. And I think, I don't know whether it was CEA or NEA just put in this, and it worked very well. But, you know, people, as you indicated, people have issues.
Representative Klayman.
Somebody has to make a choice between whether they don't like the idea of Big Brother watching them using power versus saving money.
That could be.
And would these meters need a communication line as well of besides just power? Obviously, it would have to talk to the utility and such. Need another?
No, it comes through. It's an internet-based process. So some have. I don't know how the array is set up, but you're right. All that data has to be collected and then communicated. So. But we started with 1,300 meters you do things right. You put them out and you confirm that things are working, because we have a very unique environment in Fairbanks. It used to at one time get, 60 below. not recently, yeah. but we've had that. So we need to make sure that the electronic equipment works for us. We're very pleased with the results, so starting this spring, we're going to roll out the balance of the meters. And we're very optimistic that this is going to improve service immensely. Next slide, reiterating the fact that, this was, not only the size of the refund, but the way the refund was issued was a real positive, because most utilities are on a 20 or 25 year cycle. Golden Valley's a 20 year cycle or 25 year cycle. Others, some have not even, some co-ops in Lower 48 have not even given, capital credits. Others are at 30 years and that sort of thing. We are at a 25 year rotational cycle, but this year, we experimented with providing margins to those who are actually paying the margins in 2016. And so we had a unique, we paid all 25, the rotation for 25 years out, and 25% of 2016. And that was a very positive. And what it underscores is the fact that as a co-op, members are the owners. And this really shows that connection. As members, you benefit from being part of the co-op. So that was a real positive. What we just the slides that we just went through talked about Golden Valley. All of the slides up to this point have just been about Golden Valley. And I apologize that that it's just focused on Golden Valley, but that's what we know and what we do. And so what I'd like to turn now to is more of a holistic overview and the recognition and the reality, the simple reality that Golden Valley is, connected to what we call the Rail Belt. And we are, intimately connected with one another. And you saw the theme throughout is how critically dependent Golden Valley is on South Central utilities. So the next few slides shows the iteration or the development of the Alaska Rail Belt, because prior to the Alaska Rail Belt, Golden Valley was an island. We were, when we were out of power, we were out of power. Mm-hmm. And so, it became a safety, health and welfare issue, and Alaska recognized that, and we ended up building the Alaska Intertie. That was built in the 1980s, and you can see it is an extension cord. It's an extension cord or an umbilical cord that brings power up to Golden Valley, and we are critically dependent on it. So this is that was in the 1980s. Is 1990s real positive, and this is the intertie, from Golden Valley's perspective. Bradley Lake Hydro came on, Bradley Transmission, and so that brought very economical power onto the rail belt that all of us benefited from. And Fort Knox Gold Mine, which is it's a gem in Fairbanks' portfolio. That's a huge load. That came on in the 1990s, and I'm happy to say that it's continuing to produce, and it's outlived what had been projected to be its lifespan, and we're optimistic that it will continue well into the future. So that's the rail belt in 1990s. Here's the rail belt in 2000s. That you can see the Northern Intertie came on, which was another, and you can see the chart. This is the same diagram on one of the handouts that I handed. The Northern Intertie came on, which allows a redundant path connect with the Alaska Intertie. Our BESS, our battery storage system, came on, and as one of the comments made earlier, it handles the surges, you know, for short-term surges when you know, we get those, we can avoid all the as many brownouts as we used to have in the past. We got the ground-based missile defense you know, some of you are very familiar with in the Delta region, and now you've got the LRDR that's coming on, which is the long-range discriminating radar in clear. Those are big positives. The electrification of LES Pump 9, Pogo Gold Mine has come in. We built an expanded transmission line from Northville to Kearney, and clear Air Force Base, what I just mentioned, is the LRDR. And that's, you know, that could have a huge impact on load, depending on, you know, what they ultimately do. And that's, if any of you are able to get a tour out there, it's just amazing what they're doing out there. It's incredible.
John, what's the North Pole to Kearney?
It's a transmission line that I'm not really the purpose of it. I wasn't exactly sure, but it connects, provides additional power energy, and able to serve one of those areas there.
Kearney's
get some more
area.
Yeah.
Okay. I never heard of it.
So I'll get more information. That's okay. Two questions I'll follow up on. But you can see in graphic form each of the different railroad utilities and the areas that they serve. And you know, and it's really important for everybody to recognize that we are all interconnected. And, you know, the railroad utilities, you know, managers at one time, you know, you would focus on your area. You'd make decisions that are just about you. We can't afford to do that anymore. We need to look at things from a holistic perspective. Every utility has responsibility to ensure that its members are well served in that, but the decisions have impact. They resonate beyond just your utility. And so what I'd like to share with you is a video. Some of you may have already seen this. This underscores the cooperation that exists amongst the railroad utilities and the reality that, you know, people aren't going to always agree. That's the nature of it. Each utility has different interests, but you know, the railroad managers, they have regular meetings, they have very civil discourse, they understand that the issues can't just be addressed locally. And this is a wonderful video that underscores that. Let me see if I can, I thought I was doing so well, Ron.
There's been a history of the rail belt managers maybe not getting along and not being at cross purposes. And
we probably spend a little too much time fighting and not enough time working together.
I see it as individual isolated utilities that were just operating solely within their service territory and not really looking outside in and in four ways that we can combine our assets, our generation, to lower fuel costs, increase reliability, and lower costs for members.
I think that it's the end of era when we couldn't seem to agree on anything to a time where we have come together to accomplish quite a bit.
A large part of it is some new leadership. We've certainly had some direction
provided to us from the regulatory commission.
We have a group of railroad managers that are really aligned and making sure that we work together to benefit all of our members in the rail belt. Well, there's been a lot of things that have been pushing us, and some of them external stakeholders. We've seen independent power producers that have wanted to make sure they have access to our system. We've seen pushing from our legislators to make sure that we have good economic dispatch. And so we've been more open and working diligently towards making sure that we can do that.
I think one thing that makes a difference is everybody, all six utilities are vertically integrated utilities right now. Whereas before, you had utilities that were buying from another utility. So I think everybody's willing to work together now that they are more independent. It actually allows us to work closer together than maybe we did before.
I think that we've gotten beyond the desires of what is good for one utility to what's good for the rail belt as a whole, and how we are able to cooperate to benefit all of the ratepayers and not just our own ratepayers.
But ultimately, common sense is prevailing in terms of the fact that there are no borders when it comes to lowering costs for our ratepayers.
Well, the basics of the power pool are everybody takes their resources and they pool them. And you start with the cheapest resource to meet the combined load. And as you move up and you have more load, you add on to the next unit.
Now they're going to coordinate when those plants run to make sure that the lowest cost plant is running at any given time, and then share the benefits of that lower cost power.
Individually, each one of us may start a unit to get over peak, whereas if we're all working together, we're just going to turn on one unit.
And by combining the 30% more efficient new generation with combined and better planning, we think we can provide a lower cost energy.
Yeah, in the future, it's really, we just started with the power pool. I think what we can see with this next year is getting that up and running.
What we're looking to do is, number one, reduce the amount of fuel, because 50% of the cost of generation is fuel. And whenever you save fuel, you save money that gets passed along to all of our consumers through their bill. I think that we also have the ability to find other opportunities for us to work together, whether it's integrating renewables into the system, because as a group we can do that more easily than we can individually.
Absolutely, the reduction in carbon output is a key factor in all of this.
I think that the challenge over the last year has been getting to the point where we have educated legislators, our ratepayers, that we can work together, that there are benefits in working together, and that the history is behind us, and this is a new era in the rail belt.
Well, I think it's really the right thing to do, because we need to work as utilities together, whether it's power pooling, whether it's working on the gas supply, or much stronger as a group if we want to go to Juneau and lobby for a particular effort. If everybody's involved, everybody's saying the same thing, I think we've spent a much better chance of picking up those opportunities.
There's no doubt that better things can come from working together with a single mission to provide the greatest benefit we can to our members.
That video, which was done last year, is real. It's not smoke and mirrors. These individuals work well together. They work regularly. They interface on a regular basis, and they really mean what they say, because it is by working together is the only way that we can ensure that that we all succeed. And so all of us are proud that that's not just a video. That reflects reality. So that's it. Really, that's the presentation, the update. They've already talked about the power pooling agreement, the formation of Transco, which will be being filed with the RCA. And I think the future looks bright. I very much like the fact that we're all working together, and everybody, all the utilities realize that decisions cannot be made in a vacuum. So with that, I apologize for the length. I didn't realize that they were pushing up on the time, but any questions?
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So anyone that's been in South Central Alaska for any length of time has heard many variations on various visions, I guess, you know, from Arctic, I mean, there's so on and so forth. I mean, MEA brought on their plant online, where it was 171 megawatt plant, certainly within the last 5 years. I know I was part of the groundbreaking and the ribbon cutting, because, you know, just to make sure that they could maybe have their own, a little bit of a sense of what they could actually provide for their customers. I guess what I'm wondering, from what do you envision a power pooling agreement look like? Do you look at that as internal cooperation, or as a large board, or what's your vision for that?
Through the chair, I mean, optimally what would happen is that the utilities work together, and as the video reflected, you would use your lowest cost, and the next lowest cost progressively up, and you would configure all the energy in order to be able to do that, all the generation. And that's going to require some cooperation. And I think at this juncture, I know the Anchorage utilities were working on that, and I'm hopeful that will expand, because certainly Golden Valley is interested in participating. And, you know, it's an iterative process. And I know that they were working through some issues on, you know, how the billing issues and dispatch issues and that sort of thing. So I don't know the status of it, but ideally, in the optimum world, that's exactly what would happen. And the same thing with the Transco, that you would have, instead of having, in the context of wheeling rates, which are no different than tolling on a highway, that you would have one toll that allows, you know, full access. That's how, you know, optimally it gets configured. And I know that the utilities are working on that. I think the if I could just, you know, stress to the committee, is to provide those utilities the opportunity to work through those issues, because they're challenging issues, issues that need to be addressed, but they are being addressed.
Mr. Chair, yep. Thank you. So is GBA for or against the Railroad Belt Utility Board being formed?
You're talking about the Bill 382? Is that... I just read it for the very first time, so I could not tell you one way or the other. It was just handed to me earlier this morning. So I'm not in a position to respond.
He's a lawyer, remember?
the precepts of it, you know, it's what the utilities ought to be doing together.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just trying to figure out how, you know, we all know what probably needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, obviously, different utilities, depending on what their costs and generation and, you know, the things that they've went through to satisfy their customers, you know, have different positions on that, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I'm just trying to figure out how you'd see if there's a way of coordinating it without a rail-built utility being formed as an oversight board, mm-hmm. and how that could be coordinated.
Yeah. I think at this juncture, the utilities need to be working through the issues in the dialogue that's reflective in the video. I think 382 certainly provides aspirational legislation, and certainly should be something that the utilities are looking at to figure out, hey, how do we internally address these? So from that perspective, you know, I can tell you that, you know, I will be bringing this to our management to look through, and I'm certain that it's going to be at the at what we call the Rail Belt Utility Manager meetings that they have. I'm certain that'll be addressed as well. You know, it's hard, you know, because sometimes you want to, you know, pass edicts that say, okay, you're going to do it this way, And the problem with that is you know, oftentimes you know what you end up with becomes more troubling than what you're ultimately seeking to achieve. I do think there are wonderful things that are aspirational in that 382. I think it provides, really, it says what you utilities ought to be thinking about. I'm just worried about putting another body together that, you know, then, you know, that forces an issue that ought to be accomplished through dialogue.
So just say your first run at it, it sounds like a no.
No, as I said, I haven't had time to digest it. I'm going to put my lawyer hat on.
Okay. Right.
I have not had a chance to digest it. I understand the aspirational virtues of it, and I think that it expresses those well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. And thank you, John Burns, for coming in today. I do want to close with a couple comments. And the bill that's been referenced hasn't even had a hearing, but we will start hearing it here and hear more from you and other utilities and other stakeholders, you know, ratepayer groups and independent power producers, because everyone has a stake. And this isn't the first time this has come up. And being a hockey fan, I know you're familiar with the Gretzky proposal of previous administrations. I just like saying Gretzky. But yeah, it's an issue that's been around for a while, and I'm glad to hear that four utilities were in your presentation talking about power pooling, and your video showed people at Golden Valley on the phone. But, you know, I guess in the future, it would be nice to have one room that serves all the consumers, not just a particular utility, but that, and you mentioned a rate, a single rate for transmission, so if you need power from Bradley Lake or even Siri, Fire Island, to move throughout the system, that we can figure out an economic way to do that so that we can all benefit, not just, you know, people in Homer all the way to Chattanooga. I think they have Golden Valley out there. Fox, I guess. Anyhow, Representative Rusher.
Yeah, thank you very much to the chair. Did your video show NEA and Copper Valley connected? Or was that wishful thinking? Or was that just apparently it looked that way?
Yeah, I'll have to go back and look at it.
Yeah, I
just wondered
the same thing.
Yeah.
I
think it is.
I just thought I'd...
It'd be great.
Yeah.
I just kind of was wondering where you were with that one, that's all.
This green line there from Sutton over to...
Resume the video there where they haven't connected.
Okay.
Well, it has it as part of the Northern Intertie.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure if it's fully...
Operational?
Fully built out yet.
So I have three questions that I'm going to respond to.
Okay. Well, again, we will come back to these issues, and I want to thank the committee for your questions, and thank John Burns for coming down from Fairbanks, and we will adjourn this meeting at 11:38.